ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why fans. It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
You still are trying to do that or not? Give me the finger, the index finger, just to be clear. 6:14 now on this Monday morning. Things going pretty smoothly so far, Mike Dettelier. 58 degrees in New Orleans, and it's going up to 81 today, 85 tomorrow. Then a reinforcing cool front comes through Wednesday. Highs of only 78, same for Thursday. And the lower 80s Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, all that stuff as we get closer to Halloween. Every Monday with Mike Dettelier is Rouse's Markets Football Monday. Shop and save at Rouse's, the official supermarket of the Saints. How you doing, Mike?
I'm fine, Tommy. Thank you, brother.
I think they were trying to find a highlight and had a hard time doing that. Let me tell you this. If I were to tell you before the game, Mike Dettelier, because that's your name, one team's going to pass the ball 32 times, rush it 17. The other team's going to rush it 40 and pass it 26. Who's going to win? What would you tell me?
I would have said the 40 and the 26. Yeah.
And you'd be right, too, in this case, because that's exactly what happened.
And you know, come on, the script was written on this. I mean, we spoke about it all week.
Mm-hmm.
The Bears' rushing attack sort of came alive last Monday night. And that is something that their new coach wants to do. This was very reminiscent of what he did with the Lions when he was running the offense there, and that they set up the passing game with a running game, and they did it again against the Saints with DeAndre Swift and Monogany, who's a really good football player too. He's never going to be a number one back in this league, but he's always going to be a good number two. The opportunistic, and I used the term in the pregame show, and Bobby laughed. I talked about them being greedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, balls in the air, they want it. And forced fumbles, interceptions, that's what they do. They got four yesterday. Now, they're a heavily penalized team. They've been averaging 9 penalties a game, the Bears. Yesterday, they got 10. So it sort of was like the script, and the Saints really got nothing going at all. No running game against a team that was giving up over 150 yards rushing a game, and you didn't get squat.
Nope.
I mean, really, literally nothing.
44 yards, and yeah. Radler had 12 of that.
And so when you carry the ball 17 times, you get 44 yards, you know, you're not winning that. So much is put on the passing game, and that was all spurty yesterday, too. They got a big-time pass rush. That's what Dennis Allen really wants to do on defense. He wants to get after you. And they were sending corners, safeties, nickel guys, and the Saints were confused with that. So overall, this had remnants of what we saw when they played against Seattle.
Let me remnants
of that sort of game.
Let me say this. For people that don't think I'm a Saints fan, I got a Saints flag in front of my house. When they win, I have it at the 45-degree angle, right? When they lose, I have it at the 90-degree angle because that's like half staff. So I had to lower it to half staff yesterday. And then come Wednesday, I'll put it back to 45 degrees and get hopeful again, and then we'll see what happens. So I am a Saints fan. I am not being negative about the Saints. I want everybody to be clear about that. I love the Saints. But that being said, you kind of get the feeling they're just not good enough right now. Thoughts?
Yeah. I agree, Tommy. I've talked to so many different coaches that, okay, you do things schematically and you change players and you sort of maneuver certain things. And it comes to a point where you just know you're not quite good enough from a personnel standpoint. And that has become very obvious at this stage. You're just not quite good enough. And your margin of error is really small. So when you turn the ball over four times, you got no shot.
I think they're consistently inconsistent, not because they have the ability to be consistent, but because they have the ability to, every now and then, a player will make a play, but you can't expect that all the time from the team that they have. You think that's accurate?
Yeah, this is the NFL. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're playing at the highest level, and so you got guys that can play and can play on other teams. But you don't have enough of them. And this is part of you seeing the start of trying to rebuild a team, that you don't have enough players at this point. That's just the way it is. You can coach them up, try to put them in the best position, but there is a moment that, and I'm sure Kellen Moore and his staff have went through, at this stage, we can't kind of give away things and still have a chance to win. And when you give the ball over four times, Tommy, your chances of winning any type of game is virtually zero.
Given the fact that they've only won one game, didn't look great yesterday, trade deadline looming, and they're not good enough, November 4th is a trade deadline. Do you have a, I hate to say fire sale, but do you, I know Alvin Kamara said he doesn't want to go anywhere else, but do you try to shop players, try to get a little bit better, try to accumulate draft choices? But then the question is, what do you do with the draft choices, right?
Well, my first question would be,
who are you going to trade?
I want value for what I'm trading. Mm-hmm. I'm not giving that away. The NFL is very unforgiving about, okay, I'm going to give you a kind of a nickel on a dime, that sort of thing, about giving you hardly anything back in return. And, yeah, it does matter. I would love to accumulate draft choices, but you got to make the right picks too.
That's what I meant.
The other part is, what is somebody willing to give up? Are they more valuable to you this year than it would be for a sixth or a seventh round pick? Now, if they're going to give you early round picks, that's another consideration. But you don't really know. And those talks, that happens a lot. And to be honest with you, you see more trades now than you've ever seen. But there's much more talk than there is actual deals. And that too is part of it, where if a team has an injury, they're looking for a specific position, what kind of money is involved contract-wise? There's a lot of varying factors in that, but I'm sure that those discussions are actually happening. But it's what will you give me back? And then once I get them, what do I do with it?
So let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. 6:22, talking to Mike Dettillier. Every Monday with Mike Dettillier is Rouse's Markets Football Monday. Shop and save at Rouse's, the official supermarket of the Saints. 6:22, traffic now, WWL. 6:27, the half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. I want to win. I want the Saints to succeed. I take no pleasure in the Saints having a terrible day like they did yesterday or a bad season like they're having. With that being said, Mike, I was thinking about Tyler Shuck, and look, I'm not blaming anything on Spencer Rattler or anything else. This was a team loss yesterday. But what I'm thinking is Tyler Shuck sitting, well, he was not even active, but you made some moves to get him, and I was wondering, did you pass on players that maybe could have helped you that aren't there? And if not, well, then at what point, even though it's not completely Spencer's fault, he did have a tough day yesterday, but at what point do you say, well, you know what, we're 1-6. It wouldn't have been fair, I don't think, to put him in yesterday because he didn't take the – well, first of all, he wasn't active. Secondly, he didn't take the first-team reps or anything like that, so – at what point do you decide, all right, let's see what we got. Let's start maneuvering for next year because you're 1-6.
You're pretty close. Again, you didn't use the 40th overall pick on a quarterback, figuring somewhere down the line you're not going to use him.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to put him in the lineup, and I think it's fairly soon.
And then I'm looking at the bye is coming. That's kind of late in the season. That's before. Yeah, that's at Thanksgiving almost, right?
Yeah. So you're gonna see him before then, and that's just part of this game. That when you use an early round pick on a quarterback, if it's a first round pick, second round pick, he's gonna play. And you know, come on, that's always in the back of a guy like Spencer Rattler's mind. I'm one bad game away before I get pulled.
And even
that's
with that,
that's part
Mike,
of the position.
Yeah, and it's nothing against Spencer. It's,
no.
You spent this capital to get Tyler Shuck, and at some point, and especially at this point, 1-6, you got to see what he's got. You got to start evaluating people for next year because, again, I'm not giving anything up, and it's a tough – we'll talk about this on the other side of the break. It's tough as a coach because you don't want to go into every game saying, all right, guys, this is what we're doing. We're evaluating talent to see what we're going to do next year. No, you got to go into the game and you want to win, but yet Kellen Moore's challenge is going to be you got to do that with an eye toward what can I do to make this team better for next year and evaluate what I have, right?
You're doing it at other positions, cornerback, mm-hmm. linebacker, offensive tackle, you name it. You're doing it already. The quarterback spot is just like it eventually. And I think very soon Tyler Shuck's going to get his name called to be the starter.
You think this week?
If it's not this week, it'll be the following.
And you got to give him – you would know that when practice
started. And once
started,
the baton's passed, then he's got it. Then he's got it, unless an injury.
Or unless he tanks it completely?
Yep. It's okay. One of the three.
All right, 6:30, we'll take a break, pick it up. We come back right now. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. Olave had a better game yesterday, at least. That's a positive note. He was targeted 7 times, caught it 5 times for 98 yards. Let me clean this up. Tyler Shuck was active yesterday. He just did not play. I read the line wrong on the National Football League game summary that I have. One other thing I wanted to mention was that Mike Dettillier is with us. It's Rouse's Football Monday. Every Monday is Rouse's Football Monday with Mike Dettillier. Shop and save at Rouse's, the official supermarket of the Saints. And Mike, before we run out of time, you guys are going to be at the Silver Slipper tonight.
Sure will. Our first time without Dave Hilbert. You know, Dave retired last mm-hmm. Thursday from the Silver Slipper. So,
I thought he had retired before that.
What's that?
I thought he had retired before that, no?
No. He announced it, but he
that's what I'm saying.
Thursday was his last day at the Slipper, and mm-hmm. we've been with Dave since day one at the Silver Slipper. So we're back of our Silver Slipper Monday, second guest, myself along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, and taking it till 6:30, and then it'll be the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show with Mike Haas and Saints head coach Kellen Moore. Then Monday Night Football, 7:30.
Got a doubleheader tonight. You got Bucks at Lions on WWL, and you got the other one on the bet. So let's talk about the positives that you took from yesterday for the Saints.
I like what I saw from Chase Young. He got pressure, mm-hmm. and Caleb Williams, man, if I was the head coach, he'd drive me crazy. because he'll make a great throw, and then he'll make a bad one, then he runs around. Then you see some area that he could run, and he darts one out there, and it kind of hits the ground. But I thought Chase Young played well yesterday. He got pressure, and Caleb Williams, without his athleticism, he got away because he had a couple of sacks. Mm-hmm. He only got credited with a half sack yesterday, but he put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. The running game just was not there. And then even worse part, late in the game, Eric McCoy goes down with an injury. Elbow, shoulder, we'll see exactly what happens there. Kendra Miller had he went down a little bit earlier in the game, but I didn't think they got much push up front along the offensive line, and that I came across as the biggest surprise, because every other team had run the football against the Bears, and you really didn't. You brought up about Olave making the catches, but playing a lot of young guys now, Tommy, mm-hmm. all across the board. When you look at it, at Kelvin Banks Jr. at left tackle, mm-hmm. Quincy Riley at corner, Jonas Sanker at the safety position. You saw much more from Danny Stutzman mm-hmm. at linebacker than any other time this season, and you can see the movement now going, that they're playing the young guys. Hey, you know, you got to see what you got at this stage. And they may be, in your opinion, the better player over the veteran.
Mm-hmm. What did you see from Alvin Kamara yesterday?
He didn't have much room to run. It mm-hmm. was almost like the Bears said, you know what? Mm-mm. Kamara ain't beating us. Anytime he's in motion or whatever, you just make sure he's not going to be the guy to beat us. And, you know, I think in every game, when you game plan something, you try to take away one guy. Yesterday, it was obvious. Dennis Allen's defense was, he's not beating us. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be the guy. You can beat us with Olave. You can beat us with, you know, when Kendra Miller, before he went down with the injury, you can beat us with Rashid Shaheed, but you're not going to do it with Kamara. He's the guy I'm going to take out of your lineup.
Well, let me
and
take
that's
it.
Exactly what kind of what happened. Even on short passes, you could see they had targeted that out. He wasn't going to be the guy.
Quick break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Mike Dettelier. It's a Rouse's Football Monday with Mike Dettelier. Rouse's, the official supermarket of the Saints. 6:50, 10 till 7. Traffic now, WWL. All right, 6:56 and a half. Back with Mike Dettelier. Tommy Tucker, WWL, every Monday with Mike Dettelier is a Rouse's Football Monday. Rouse's, the official supermarket of the Saints. So, Mike, I'm looking at the schedule here, and I'm thinking about Tyler Shuck and what kind of baptism do you give him? You got Tampa Bay coming in this Sunday. Then you're at the Rams. Then you're at Carolina. You got the bye, and then the season's really moving along. It's November 23rd. You're playing, and it goes by so quickly. You're hosting the Falcons. Seems like a nice slot to put him in would be against the Dolphins on November 30th. That's kind of late in the season, though. Thoughts?
Oh, he'll be in there long before the Dolphins game.
Okay.
And Dolphins got their own issues. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much longer Mike McDaniel's got there after what happened yesterday against Cleveland. And today you see it not only in pro football but in college football. Owners and ADs and presidents, they got little patience. We live in that microwave world. I don't care what kind of buyout you got. You're going. Mm-hmm. You better win. That's what I brought you in here for. And so I think with Tyler Shuck, it's real quick. If it's not this week, it'll be the following. Tommy, you won't wait that long. I think you're going to give him his opportunity. It'll be real quick.
Matter whether it's at home or on the road?
It doesn't matter at this stage. And my thing is, for the young players and older players, I want to see your attitude. Okay, we know we're fighting an uphill battle. But, you know, okay, we all in this together. But I want to see how your attitude is. And because for the younger guys, for some of them, they've lost more games, you know, in half a season than they lost during their entire career.
And college.
And college. Mm-hmm. And what's their attitude toward working, paying attention, getting your film work in, doing what you're supposed to do right? your mental kind of concentration level. That's what I want to know if I'm a coach and a head coach of, can I count on you to be able to do that? Because you're part of the rebuild here. If you're not, then I got to go somewhere else in the offseason.
Time for
and
Kellen
you don't
want
to put bad tape.
Time for
there.
Kellen Moore to drop the hammer? You think he already has, or that's just not his style?
That's not his personality to drop the hammer. I think, you know, you can have maybe people on your staff do it.
Mm-hmm.
But he is who he is. And you can't fake the funk.
No,
that's an A-Bear line, but it's true.
Yeah.
You can't fake it.
You cannot. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. We'll listen this afternoon.
Thank you, Tommy.
You bet. Mike Dettelier will be on this afternoon at 4 with Bobby Hebert, a second guest live on location. Silver Slipper Casino in beautiful Hancock County, Mississippi, talking about LSU and the Saints. Then the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show, Mike Haas and the Cajun Cannon with Kellen Moore. 7:15 now. Here's what you need to remember. It is a beautiful Monday morning. Temperatures are like in the 50s to 60s across the area. So open the windows and enjoy it. And the highs today are only going up into the 70s. So that's the first thing you need to remember, okay? Maybe 81. 85 tomorrow, then the 70s by Wednesday and Thursday, then the lower 80s. So we're getting close to Halloween. Maybe a real cold front coming through. Who knows? Right now it's 58. That's the first thing you need to remember. Second thing you need to remember is that every Monday with Jeff Palermo is Rouse's Markets Football Monday. Shop and save at Rouse's, the official supermarket of LSU. Now, let's talk about what happened with Vanderbilt. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Jeff, we kind of all saw this coming, didn't we?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if everyone saw it coming. I think there were still a lot of people that just couldn't come to grips going into the game on Saturday that LSU would actually lose to Vanderbilt. And then watching how the game played out, Vanderbilt wins by a touchdown, but it really seems like they won by more than that. It just never really felt like LSU was going to win that football game.
Well, they could have scored a touchdown at the end of the game easily, but...
Who, Vanderbilt you're talking
yeah.
about? Yes, that's true. They did have the opportunity. Pavia went down.
Gave himself up,
right. Let the clock run. But even besides that, it just never really seemed that LSU was going to come up with enough stops defensively. And LSU's offense, Garrett Nussmeier was getting beat up. The offensive line was not, once again, had a really rough day. And... in the end, Vanderbilt wins, and the fan base is outraged, and a lot of questions, and the hot seat is starting to get a little warm here for Coach Brian Kelly.
So, you know, the play Camelot, I don't know if you've ever seen it or not. It starts with King Arthur sitting around a fire, and then it's a flashback from there, and he says, how could it have come to this? And if you think about, you know, the high marks that LSU got in a transfer portal and expectations going into the season, I guess I would ask you, how could it have come to this?
Well, I think it's a lot of the problems start at the offensive line. And this coaching staff thought guys like Weston Davis, Tyree Adams, and granted Tyree Adams got hurt, Cohen Echols, they have misidentified these players as being very talented, or they just haven't coached them up.
Mm-hmm.
And then even the additions that they've had with Braylon Moore and Josh Thompson, those guys have not been able to elevate this offensive line, and it's just been bad. It's performed so bad, and off LSU is LSU and North Carolina is the only two Power Four schools that have not scored more than 25 points in a game. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is just stunning when you think about it, because you went into this season thinking, hey, you got Garrett Nussmeier back. He threw for 4,000 yards. It looks like you're loaded at the wide receiver position. You got some quality running backs. But offensively, there just has not been enough consistency. And then I think what we saw play out on Saturday is the depth. We talked about it going into this game that LSU, the front seven of LSU, well, really the whole defense has played well, but they were going to miss, or it was likely they were going to miss, and they ended up not playing Whit Weeks and Bernard Gooden, two starters in that front seven. You've already lost Gabriel Relford for the year, and all of a sudden, You're starting to see some attrition there on that front seven, and they the backups that they have coming in are not as good. And then I would also say, you know, guys that were listed as five-star prospects coming out of high school, the Dominic McKinleys, the Harold Perkins, those guys. I mean, that was a really bad game from Harold Perkins. Mm-hmm. It just he's supposed to be covering these tight ends and they're wide open. I mean, they just didn't have. And then he's supposed to. And I know there's a lot on his plate because Whit Weeks was hurt, but they just.
Was the it's not eating up some of his attention as well or not?
Say that again.
Was the quarterback eating up some of his attention?
Oh,
as well?
It was eating up everyone's attention. Yeah. But the discipline. The other thing we talked about, Tommy, was that they needed to have discipline going into this game. You couldn't try to play hero ball defensively. Mm-hmm. You couldn't say, "Wait a minute, I know I'm assigned to do this, but I think I should probably do this because it might result in a tackle at the line of scrimmage or whatever it may be." And there were too many guys that were not playing their responsibilities. And because of that, it led to Vanderbilt basically controlling the game offensively. So even though it was hammered home by the coaches, the players did not take the game plan and execute the game plan.
Let's talk about the hot seat when we come back with Brian Kelly and how expensive that seat could be. 7:21, we're talking to Jeff Palermo. Every Monday with Jeff is Rouse's LSU Football Monday. Rouse is the official supermarket of LSU. 7:21, traffic now, WWL. 7:25 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Beautiful Monday morning, talking to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Every Monday with Jeff is Rouse's Markets Football Monday. Shop and save at Rouse's, the official supermarket of LSU. Man, I'm going to tell you what, you got Texas A&M, number 3 in the nation, coming in Saturday night at Tiger Stadium. Then you got a bye, then you got Alabama, then you got Arkansas, then you got Western Kentucky, then you could wrap it up with Oklahoma. They got two losses already. Take me from here, Jeff.
No, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. LSU really needs to play its best game of the season, maybe needs to play its best game of the Brian Kelly era to get a win on Saturday. And it'll be very interesting to hear what Brian Kelly has to say today because, as I mentioned right before we went to that commercial break, the fan base is angry. It's upset. It feels like it was sold a bill of goods. The talk was that this team looked like it could be a national championship contender in the college football playoff. And as I mentioned in my column, it's just an okay team. Mm-hmm. And okay is not good enough when there is so much more investment now from this fan base. And again, it just seemed like, as we were also talking about in the last segment, it just seemed like, considering what you had coming back and the players that you brought in, it's supposed to be better than what you're seeing right now. And so the frustration level is at an all-time high since Brian Kelly's been the head coach.
If I were to point to two things, I'd point to Garrett Nussmeier being injured, and I'd point to the offensive line not giving him the time that he needs and also not helping with the running game. Thoughts?
Yeah. I, like I said, I think the problems offensively all start with the offensive line, and they have just not performed very well at all. And this offensive line has pretty much struggled a lot. When you look at really a lot of the losses during the Brian Kelly era has been pointed at the offensive line play just hasn't been nearly good enough. Despite all the talent that they had on that offensive line last year, it was just not good enough. So what you're probably looking at here, Tommy, and the buyout is very high if they decided to move on from Coach
Brian
Kelly.
Yeah, I was getting that. That's in your story as well at WWL.com. Y'all can find it. Talk about that if you
will,
Jeff.
Well, it's a little north of $50 million. Mm. And then so it's unlikely that LSU is going to pay that buyout unless there's a couple of very, very rich people that step up and help out on that. But I don't see that. But what you're probably going to see is wholesale changes as far as assistant coaches on the offensive side of the football, much like you had 2 years ago when they totally had to rebuild the defensive staff. And you're going to have to just try to sell that to the fan base. But not only are you going to have to basically overhaul your offensive coaching staff, but the roster is going to need a lot of overhauling. is Michael Van Buren the next guy as far as the quarterback? If not, you got to go out and get one. That costs money nowadays. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to rebuild this entire offense once again, just like you had to rebuild the defense this past year, and you're going to have to rebuild the defense again next year because a lot of the guys that you brought in are only here for one season. So it's just hard right now. It looks really bleak, Tommy, and it's hard to see how they climb themselves out of this. So that's why I'm interested to hear what Brian Kelly has to say. I'm always interested to hear what he has to say, but how does he try to spin this to say that it's not as bad as it looks? Because
it is.
It's really bad
it's
right now.
It's as bad as it looks. Real quick, if not Brian Kelly, who?
Oh, man. I don't know, Tommy. I've had that question being asked to me. Because really
before you run somebody, you better have somebody better.
You
take
better.
His place.
And we're seeing all kinds of coaching changes all across college football. It's hard. That's the other thing. I mean, you're right, Tommy. And that's the key thing. If you're gonna move on from BK, you better make sure you got somebody that's gonna get this thing going.
You don't want to make another $50 million mistake.
No, you're right about that.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it as always. You can go to WWL.com. You can find Jeff's article, very well written piece. When we come back, it's time to bank on it. Financial insights you can count on with Jason Shields, the COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We're going to talk about Bitcoin today. Very interesting stuff. Stay tuned. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. All right, 7:46, 14 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, time for Bank On It, financial insights you can count on with Jason Shield, COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. How you doing, Jason?
Doing good, Tommy. How are you this morning?
I'm all right. You enjoying that cool weather?
It's beautiful outside.
It is. Man, if we can only bottle this up. Let's talk about cryptocurrency. What is it and why was it created?
Yep, sure thing, Tommy. So being a banker, I often get questions from customers, friends, family. What is cryptocurrency and why should I be involved in it or should I not be involved in it? And so today, what I really want to do is, this is a fairly divisive topic. A lot of people have opinions. I'm not going to try to hype it or bash it. What I really want to do is just explain what it is, where it came from, and what people should really understand before they put money into it blindly. Mm-hmm. And so Bitcoin itself, which was the original cryptocurrency, the major one that everyone knows about, launched in 2009. And the reason it came about was, as you know, in 2008, there was the financial crisis where trust in banks, trust in any financial institutions across the globe all kind of wavered because it was the first time anyone realized, okay, well, maybe the financial system wouldn't exist. Maybe we need something else. So it was this idea that was created in 2009. It was created by an anonymous person or group of people, we're not exactly sure, called Satoshi Nakamoto. And so the idea was, we're going to make a peer-to-peer digital currency, right? So that just means a currency that's not backed by any government. It's not backed by any type of physical asset. It's just simply, I own this digital currency and I'm able to transact business with it without going through a middleman or holding it in a bank or anything like that.
So
the concept of it was really easy, right? Digital cash for a digital world.
So it started as a payment system. Is that what I'm understanding? But it's not how people use it now?
Yeah, and so that's the thing, right? If you talk to a lot of Bitcoin investors, the original intent was simply to be an alternative payment system. And so your true users of Bitcoin were people who believed that this was an alternative method of payment that was going to kind of change things and it was going to protect us from unstable economies. But most people you talk to about Bitcoin are speculators. They're simply people who are investing in it because they want profit out of it, right? So they're saying, I'm going to get into Bitcoin because it's going to double or triple or quadruple in value, whatever you have. And they're not really even using it for payments, right? Which was its original intent, was to be that alternative payment system. And so that's good, but it's not good, right? And Bitcoin as an investment opportunity has a few challenges. And you can go look at its historical losses over time, and there's been multiple instances where Bitcoin's lost over 50% of its value, right? Just overnight. That could be anything. Like there was a time where China banned Bitcoin. The market dropped precipitously, right? And so when you think about investments, right, when I think about my 401k and my retirement, I really don't want to put it into vessels that can lose 50% of their value overnight, right? If you want to gamble, or if you want to use this as a vessel to just say, hey, I'm going to take some of my fund money, if you budget that accordingly and and want to try to ride that wave, you could try to catch it really high or you could catch it really low. But that's it is we need to be honest. It is what it is when you have that level of volatility, Tommy. It's speculative investment or gambling.
That is a major concern, the volatility, right?
Yeah, the volatility is. Like I mentioned, the large dips, and your bigger problem is it's not backed by anything, right? It's not backed by gold. It's not backed by a government. It's not backed by any resource that you can point to and say, this is what it is. It is worth what people are willing to pay for it, which is good now. But at some point, if something else comes along or if a government intervenes itself, it could honestly be worth nothing overnight. And more concerning is that I'm hearing more and more stories of people who ask, should they borrow money to get into this because they see the upside returns. Mm-hmm. I cannot caution your listeners enough, Tommy. No one should ever borrow money to get into crypto or any speculative investment for that matter, right? If you take that equity in your home, which is that most valuable resource for most of us, and you may get rich, but the alternative is just destroyed all that equity in your house and hit the reset button on it. So I would always encourage everyone, don't invest in something that's speculative with funds that you really need to use for your retirement or things of that nature.
What are these Satoshi wallets? What is that?
Yeah, so in the opening, I talked about Satoshi, right? And in essence, that's the unknown creator or creators of Bitcoin. And this one's an important one that I always like to bring up. There are wallets attributed to the creator that own about 5% of the total Bitcoin population. And so they have never moved, right? But as of this morning, they're worth over about $120 billion potentially. Now, you can imagine there's someone out there in the world who potentially has access to these wallets. Mm-hmm. If those funds were to move, Tommy, the entire system could become destabilized instantaneously. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but I really don't like to invest in things that have unknown factors beyond my control. Mm-hmm. This person could simply cash out, say they're done. They could be a government. They could be any kind of actor. We don't know. But if those things were to move, the drops in instability in the system could be huge, quite frankly.
What are some things listeners should consider investing in?
Yeah, so Tommy, you know, I know it's not exciting and sexy, but I always like to talk about just investing in index funds. It's simple. It's very easy to get into, low friction. And, you know, if the S&P 500 has shown year over year, its average gains are about 10%, right? Even if you adjust for inflation, it's 6-7%. And so, you know, look, that's simple, steady gains, right? It's more than you would earn in, say, a CD, but it's building wealth for the future. And, you know, I've talked about that over the years, but, you know, if you put $1,000 into the S&P, in 10 years, it becomes $2,800. That's small potatoes, but it's real returns. And you think, if you just get into those habits of $25 here, $50 here, whatever you want to do, we call it micro investing, you know, sweep a couple cents here and there, that becomes real money, Tommy. And that can be the difference between, you know, losing it all if you just bet badly on the wrong cryptocurrency and, you know, building wealth that you could use to potentially retire, especially if you're young, right? I always encourage the young folks that have disposable income to just do some small. Don't get that Starbucks this week. Sweep that $10, $20 to an account. You'll actually...
ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Fee and fees apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do? Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year, Andrew Berry. I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
To see that compounding impact of it relatively quickly.
Very valuable information, Jason. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Count on it. Bank on it. Financial insight you can count on with Jason Shields. I think some very valuable information. He's the COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Jason, if people want to find out more about Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, how do they do it?
Yeah, you can come into any of our branches, Tom, and you can go to gulfbank.com or you can just give us a call. We're always willing to talk with anything that you folks want to talk about.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Jason Shield, COO, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, 754, 6 till 7, no, 6 till 8. I want to go back. Traffic now, WWL. 8:16, beautiful fall Monday morning. Get out and enjoy it because it's probably warm again tomorrow, but then it'll cool off again later on in the week. Jeremy Alford joins us now, editor and publisher of La Politics, to join up to La Politics Weekly to talk about the special session. Hey, Jeremy, how you been?
Hey, Tommy, good. Good morning.
Thanks for taking the time with us. Tell me what's in this call.
So we got a special session that's going to start on Thursday, and it is entirely election-related. And it looks like the big issue is going to be whether or not lawmakers want to push back the election schedule next year, particularly qualifying that's scheduled for January. Because what's going on is we have some competing deadlines. We have a case that's currently before the U.S. Supreme Court that could very likely end up redrawing our congressional lines. And originally, the lawmakers and the Landry administration wanted to have a special session to draw a new map to get rid of one of the majority black districts and return the congressional lines to kind of like the way they used to be before this most recent map. But they don't know if the Supreme Court is going to issue a decision anytime soon. So they're looking at pushing qualifying back so that folks won't have to sign up for districts that they may not eventually run in. And, you know, Tommy, it's kind of messy. Next year, we're supposed to move to closed primaries. The Secretary of State, Nancy Landry, isn't thrilled about the prospect of having to redo that calendar. Her office just spent a lot of time and resources going around the state educating people about the new closed primary system and what those dates are going to be. And, you know, there's kind of a schedule that she has issued to lawmakers saying that, look, if we get a Supreme Court decision by December 20th, we can stick to what we have. If it happens sometimes after that, there's a variety of different ways we can handle this. We could push back the closed primary. We could push back qualifying. There's even a worst case scenario where we return back to the open primary and jungle primary system that we all know and love. So there's a lot of moving pieces to this, but lawmakers right now, it sounds like they're only going to have that one issue on the table is, do we move back qualifying? As of this morning, we're about 3 days out, and there's no legislation filed. So we're gonna learn pretty quickly exactly what the administration is looking to do, because we're going to have to see a bill here in the next couple of days.
Yeah, because this is supposed to start on the 23rd, right?
That's right. It starts on Thursday. Lawmakers knew this was coming. Originally, they were asked to kind of put those dates aside. To possibly redraw the congressional lines, but we had a hearing on the Supreme Court level last week, and it sounds like the court's going to need a little bit more time to come to a decision.
Yeah, what I don't understand is why have this on Thursday when you're not going to get a court hearing until December at the earliest. What am I missing here, Jeremy?
Well, I think it's an act of precaution. Mm-hmm. I think with the Landry administration and Republican leaders in the legislature don't want to happen is for congressional candidates and U.S. Senate candidates possibly to go in and qualify in January for congressional districts that may not exist if the Supreme Court issues a decision after that qualifying period in January.
But I guess I'm wondering, why wouldn't you wait until maybe December to call a special session? It just seems premature, or maybe not. Does it have to do with the schedule of the lawmakers?
It's in the eye of the beholder. I mean, this entire debate is going to go down party lines. The Democrats would rather wait and see what the court's going to do. Republicans would rather be proactive. I think what Republicans don't want to do is to send any kind of signal to the court that they're trying to preempt their authority and draw the congressional district lines now. That sounds pretty important to the Republican leadership and to the Landry administration. So I think they're going to tackle what they can tackle, which is possibly pushing back those qualifying dates in case the Supreme Court does come back and say we need a new map.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. 820, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jeremy Alford, editor, publisher of La Politics Weekly. Special session supposed to start on October 23rd. Nothing's been filed yet, so we'll have to see. Traffic now, WWL. 826, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Jeremy Alford, editor and publisher of La Politics Weekly, about the governor calling for a special session starting on Thursday. So ideally, best possible case, the governor would like to see what, or do we know yet, Jeremy?
Yeah, it sounds like the leadership and the governor is zero in on trying to push back qualifying in January, whether that's just for the House races, which is the map that's in question, or it includes the U.S. Senate race with Bill Cassidy and everything else. We're gonna have to wait and see. But as of right now, no bills have been filed. The leadership was waiting to see exactly what that legislation looks like. I do get the sense that there's no sense of urgency in terms of trying to draw a map before the Supreme Court decides. In fact, I think the leadership wants to show the court that they're trying to not preempt their authority to make that decision. So it's all about the calendar right now, and whether they're going to push back qualifying, and you know, depending on when the U.S. Supreme Court makes its decision. It could play out in a bunch of different ways. We could see a bill with some contingencies in it saying that if we have a decision by this date, this would happen. But we're going to have to wait and see. We're going to be getting into it here pretty shortly, though, with that session starting on Thursday.
Does this have anything at all to do with the Senate race and the governor trying to give an advantage to whomever it is that he would like to see as the next senator from Louisiana?
I mean, Tommy, there could be some politics like that on the back end of this thing, and I just don't see it. But, mm-hmm. you know, I think right now this is all about the U.S. Supreme Court case and the effort coming out of the White House to increase the number of Republican seats by redrawing maps.
So is there going to be a Democratic challenger for the Senate seat at all? I know John Bell said he's not interested, and you can understand how he doesn't think he has much of a chance to win, I would guess. Does a Democrat have any chance of winning?
I mean, we don't even have a marketable name in the mix right now on the Democratic side, and that candidate would need at least $4 million to make a real go of this. And you've got Republican challengers like Senator Blake Miguez and Treasurer John Fleming, who both are sitting on just $2 million in their campaign accounts to $9.5 million for Cassidy. And both Miguez and Fleming both loaned their campaigns a million in Miguez's case and $2 million in Fleming's case. So it's tough, man. It's tough out there to raise money for a U.S. Senate race against an incumbent.
How important is President Trump's endorsement?
I think it's everything. Right now, you've got the majority whip, Steve Scalise, kind of sitting on the sidelines saying he's not going to endorse in that Senate race because he's worried about his own race. So I think everybody's waiting to see what Trump does. If anybody can cause a big ripple in this race, it's going to be President Trump.
Thank you, Jeremy. Any final thoughts?
No, we're going to session starts Thursday. We should have some information soon.
See what happens. Thank you, sir. Jeremy Alford, editor, publisher of La Politics Weekly. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll talk to Ben Riggs, executive director of Real Reform Louisiana, about the ongoing insurance crisis in the state. And has anything really been done substantively to deal with it? You can win tickets to the next Saints game when the Black and Gold take on Tampa Bay in the Caesars Superdome this Sunday. You can score two premium tickets to the game, plus a pair of VIP tailgate passes from Bullseye Event Group. open bar, premium liquor, all-you-can-eat buffet from celebrity chef Aaron May, all overlooking Champions Square. But I would ask you, please save some room so you can do some yelling to help the boys in black and gold. Winning's easy. Go to WWL.com/contest. Enter one time every day for your chance to win Saints Bucks tickets from Saints Radio. You have until Thursday to do that, so enter today and every day until then. Right now, we pause for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. 8:47, 13 till 9, Tommy Tucker. Beautiful fall morning in the Crescent City in southeastern Louisiana, and it might want to enjoy it because it's not going to be that way tomorrow necessarily, but we do get a little reinforcing cool front coming in on Wednesday and Thursday, I think it is, so we can enjoy that. The insurance business, it's all about the numbers and the actuarial tables and the float, in case you didn't know, and Ben Riggs is here to tell us about the float right now. Ben Riggs, who is, of course, the Executive Director of Real Reform Louisiana. How you doing, Ben Riggs?
I'm good. How are you? Good to be back with you, Tommy.
I'm all right, sir. Let's talk about the way the financing for insurance companies work and what they're doing with claims in Louisiana. I don't know how you want to tell this story because it's kind of complicated, so I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah, it is a little complicated, and I think it starts with an assumption that most people would make, which is that insurance companies make most of their profits by selling insurance policies. Mm. But the truth is that insurance companies primarily write insurance policies because it gives them a large sum of cash in an industry that is sort of a pay now for our service, and then we'll pay out later for claims.
Hopefully.
And so it leaves them holding, And so it leaves them holding this large sum of cash. Currently, the property insurance, the property and casualty insurance industry, according to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, is holding a $1.1 trillion, not billion, trillion dollar policyholder surplus. That exceeds the GDP of Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
All right. So they're sitting on a mound of cash that they collect from people paying premiums for policies. And in the interim, before they pay out claims, they invest that pile of money that they're sitting on. That pile of money is called the float. And they invest that money with massive returns. I actually wrote an article last week where I quoted AM Best saying that in 2024, the property and casualty insurance industry recorded an $89 billion investment profit. But that actually cut it short. And in fact, when you go to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, they turned a $164 billion investment profit in 2024. And just for comparison for your listeners, to show you how much more they make off of investments than they do writing policies. The 2024 was the best underwriting year for property and casualty insurers since 2006.
Now, wait, what does that mean, Ben, when you say best underwriting year? Explain that.
The underwriting profits are the amount that they actually make off of writing policies.
Okay.
So it was the best year they had since 2006, and they turned a $25.4 billion profit. So they made, in their best year since 2006, $24.5 billion off of underwriting, whereas they made $164 billion off of investments. There's a certain, on the surface level, it's obvious why this is of interest, but I think there's actually something that's more interesting that you and I would follow a little more closely is that when we're talking about legislation regarding the insurance industry, sort of the politics of the insurance industry, you frequently hear people say that insurers are losing money. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Temple has repeatedly said that insurers are losing money. But the reality is that they're focusing that entire comment on underwriting. Mm-hmm. And one of the things Warren Buffett has said that I think everybody should know, Warren Buffett's important in this conversation because he owns GEICO, one of the largest insurers in the country. And he's
the little lizard investor. Works for Warren Buffett?
Yeah, 100%. Wow. They own Berkshire Hathaway, owns GEICO. Mm-hmm. And think about how Warren Buffett's made all his money. Mm-hmm. He's an investor.
Right.
So he sees GEICO. If I go buy an insurance company, that's going to give me a pile of cash that I couldn't amass any other way. and I can invest and make massive profits. But one of the things he said is that we make, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is in just entirely accurate to what he was saying, was that we make so much money off of our investments that the competition for your premium dollars to bankroll our investments is so intense that insurers are actually willing to run underwriting losses in competition with one another for your premiums, because we know they're going to make that back many times over in investments. So to say that insurers are losing money writing policies is sort of disingenuous when you talk about the overall health and well-being of their finances, because that's not where the majority of their revenue is coming from. And I think that people in Louisiana need to know that to be informed about the policies that are being proposed and passed in the legislature.
And as you say that, as I say that about the Geico lizard, that's why there's such intense competition to get you to buy policies, because they're not looking at the underwriting part of it. They're looking at the premium part of it so they can invest the float. Accurate?
A million percent. They are willing to run underwriting losses, and they are willing to spend $1 billion a year advertising to get you to buy their product, because your premium dollars are going to finance their investments, which is where the majority of their profits come from.
But even with that being said, okay, it's America. The idea is to make money. I get that. But you also have to honor the part of the policy where the underwriting part of it, where you have to pay the claim if the claim is made and it's fair. And unfortunately, that's not really what's happening, right, in Louisiana?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I agree with you completely. I don't have a problem with them investing premium dollars. That's perfectly fine. Make money. However, we should have the conversation where we're informed about the overall profits, not just the underwriting profits.
Right.
And we should honor those policies. People are paying those premium dollars with the expectation that when catastrophe strikes, when they're in an accident, when there's a storm, that their insurance company is going to step in and honor their obligation. That's the basic promise of insurance. But what we've seen is in Louisiana, insurers closed 44.6% of claims without payment in 2024. That's nearly half. So that means almost one out of every two claims filed in Louisiana are being closed without payment. But to put that
so in when you say closed
sort of contrast, that's up from 26% from 2004. That is a major shift.
When you say closed without payment, that means okay, we're going to deny it. No, denied. We're not going to give you a dime on it. Sue us if you want.
Yeah, denied, 100%. Delay, deny. And force them into a protracted process that many will just bow out from.
And does that include legal action or not? Because here's where I'm going with this, Ben, because I'm thinking on the other side of it, well, wait, and then you're also trying to limit any type of legal recourse you have against insurance companies, right, on the other side of it?
There's no question that the more that you delay and deny, the more litigation you're going to see. So if you want to understand why litigation comes up, it is because policyholders feel like they didn't get a fair shake from their insurer.
But there is also a move afoot to try to limit the litigation or the
Tort reform is an effort to make it harder for you to file and have your claim paid. 100%.
Thank you, Ben. Got to run. Appreciate the time and the information. 8:55, 5 till 9, traffic now, WWL. Sydney Torres here. Dave Cohen right in there. You see him? Look through the window. They're waving at each other. It's radio. They could say hello. I don't, both of them.
Hey, Big Dave. Big Dave. And thank you, Tommy.
You know, I'm an idiot, Dave, but I just realized that the IV came from, an IV waste came from, because he's Sydney Torres the fourth. I know it takes a while for me, but by God, once I got it, I got it. I'm going to tell you what, once I get it, I know, I understand that, but it takes a while, but once I have it for life. That's the thing, okay? So where'd the IV come from? I'm just kidding. So I'm in the French Quarter at Garland Robinette's art show on Saturday night, and I see at St. Anne and Royal a sign on a balcony that says, keep IV waste. Now, of all the things that just struck me, Sydney, because of all the things that you would see on a French Quarter balcony, you wouldn't think a sign supporting a garbage company would be one of them. But I think that speaks to the job that you guys do.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to give the credit to my team. Yes, I'm the leader of the team, but, you know, they put their heart and soul every day in going out there and going the extra mile. You know, for example, when they're picking up trash, after they're finished cleaning the French Quarter, they go and they start weeding in between the sidewalks and pulling grass and, you know, doing extra from what the
How do you get that out of your people?
You know, like last night.
I shouldn't say your people, your team members.
My team members. I'm one of them. And I work alongside of them last night. I went out on Sunday night and I met them on shift change. And when I got there, I got to speak with each one of them coming in. They were all packing up their garbage cans and getting ready to go in for the night. And I handed out each one of them a $20 bill and thanked them for the day. I know that's not a lot, but I mean,
no,
it's
that
just,
means the world.
Yeah.
That.
And so I had the cash and I was walking to each one, giving them a $20 bill. I like,
but do you know what that means? And I'm just telling you this because I'm not Sidney Torres. I'm the guy that would be on the other end of it. Okay. That's how I grew up and everything. That means the world, because not only is the boss there at shift change to show his appreciation, but he's like, you know what? Hey, get a six pack on the way home or whatever the hell $20 will buy today. And that I can tell you from being on the other end of that, that means the world.
Well, I think to me, I want to always thank them and show my appreciation, whether I'm out there working with them or financially showing them and making sure that they have the right uniforms, new uniforms, clean uniforms, and being able to talk to them and ask them.
I would bet you even care if they fit the uniforms, don't you?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. They have to. We want them to look like it's perfect. And I don't want to say military because some people have issues with the military coming here. But
you play like you dress, and it all lends itself to how you do your job, right?
Correct. I mean, I think just because it's garbage doesn't mean it can't be, clean, sexy,
and take
pride in it, look nice, and very professional. And that's what we strive for, is to make sure that our people feel well in what they do and look good and give them the tools they need to do their job.
How do you keep the truck so clean?
We wash them every day. I have a crew of people. We spend about $250,000 a year washing all of our equipment with a set of guys that work really hard, men and women, not just men, that work really hard to clean the outside as well as the inside.
How often do you go to shift change and things like that?
I try to go as often as possible. I mean, I'm definitely out there on all the big special events, working hand in hand with them,
mm-hmm.
you know, running equipment or helping them sweep up or, you know, logistics and on the radio.
You're out there with a broom.
Oh, I love
or
it.
Or a shovel or anything else.
Whatever I got to do to get it clean on time and show that, you know, we can do this together. We're going to do this. Let's get it up. I think it's important. You know, as far as the garbage trucks go, we have over 150 employees and, you know, we run a lot of trucks, full-time and part-time around 200, and we run about 127 heavy trucks. We pick up about 90%, a little less than 90% of the city of New Orleans, everything from the lake to the river, from the Jefferson Parish line. And you know, we work really hard to do what we do and try to do the best at it.
I'm going to be careful what sports analogy I choose here because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Are you guys the Yankees of trash collection? Do you have people clamoring to work for you?
Absolutely. We get a lot of emails through the website. I shouldn't say this on the radio, but I get blind copied on every email that comes through in customer service because I want to see, you know, whether it's one can in Gentilly or it's the, you know, whole city contract sanitation director. I want everybody to get that first class service. And if we do something where we missed a can or we didn't pick up bulk waste or somebody has a special pickup like a treadmill or, you know, they want to put out tires with rims or, mm-hmm. you know, I like to make sure that we communicate to them quickly and let them know exactly what needs to happen and then follow up the next day to make sure that it actually gets done.
I want to talk about you because you look like you could be a rock star. You look like you could be a movie star, and I mean that in the most manly way possible. Not that there's anything wrong with that, you know, to get all that stuff out the way, but you do. And to think that you are in the waste business just amazes me. But I want to talk about the business part of it first. And that involves the city and this thing that's coming up this week. I'm confused about where we are on all of this because it seems to me just again, being on the other side of it, that it's one of those deals where it's working. Everybody's happy. Going back to the sign that I saw at St. Anne and Royal Street, Keep Ivy Waste. everybody is it, nobody has a problem with this except for a few, and then they got to screw it up. Is that a misrepresentation of what's going on or not?
Yeah, well, first off, I want to thank you for your kind words. I
think it's true.
That.
I'm just saying that's what the public says. Well, you don't pick up my garbage, but I wish you did.
Well, I appreciate it, and my team really appreciates it, and I share with them all the time these comments.
Let me take a second. They do a great job in Plaquemines. I have no complaints with Plaquemines, so I shouldn't have said that. They do a great job, but that being said, I can see where others would wish that you picked up their trash.
Absolutely. Look, you know, we really try to pay attention. Always say devil's in the details, but this situation with putting this out to bid is, to me, I think it's a waste of city money and time and energy. The sanitation director asked me, would I honor my low bid price? I said yes.
This is the mayor's sanitation director, right?
Correct.
The administration's sanitation director comes to you and says...
He says yes. He called me. He said, this was about a month ago. He says, would you honor the low bid price? Because I was the lowest bid on the emergency contract. He said, would you honor the low bid price if we renew it for 6 months? We've got Sugar Bowl, we got New Year's Eve, Mardi Gras early this year. It's a hard lift for anybody to have that amount of equipment ready to clean. There's a new mayor coming in. Would you honor the low bid price? I said, absolutely. I didn't have to think about it. I said, absolutely. No problem. I know the city has a deficit. We'll honor the low bid price. So he said that, I said, well, how's this going to work? He says, well, the legal department has given the blessing that we can do a 6 month extension, and the CAO is okay with it. So we're going to go to the mayor with it. So about 4 weeks went by, and I was at City Hall on another issue with the recycling. And at the city council chambers, and the sanitation director was there. He says, you got a minute? Can we walk outside? And we walked outside, and he tells me, sorry to tell you, but the mayor says absolutely not. She wants it to go out to bid with an RFP. And I'm like, okay, nope, we're going to bid on it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, at the end of the day, why go through the gymnastics and do all that? But I don't know. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to move forward and put the bid in, so hopefully it's graded properly.
So where does the French Quarter Management District fit in all of this?
Well, last week they had a meeting, and they're prepared if it goes another direction that they're going to step in and extend my bid that I put in with them that I won. They never did have to activate it because the Supreme Court, you know, jumped in and granted the writ and allowed us to move forward under the current emergency contract that ends December 23rd. I know it's a lot to unpack, but I'm trying to
I understand that. So let me ask you this. So for the person that has the Keep IV Waste on their balcony on St. Anne and Royal or close to that, you're going to be picking up the garbage one way or the other, either with the French Quarter Management District or the RFP?
That's the way that it looks right now. I think that they're prepared if you know, it goes another way, that they're prepared to keep the level of services that they're getting right now. Look, this is not an easy contract. People can say what they want and say, oh, they can do it. But there were people doing it before, and they were not getting the compliments, and they were not happy with the services that they were getting. And the reason why is because they don't have the tools to do it. They're not willing to invest the money in the tools to do it. And the management structure that they've had or had didn't work. I mean,
so let me ask you this. With all of that being said, how can you be the low bidder?
Well, we own a lot of the equipment already because we have over 10,000 customers. We service St. Bernard, Harahan, and we have, like I said, 90% of New Orleans. We have an incredible service shop with mechanic trucks.
So it's
and
economies
parts.
Of scale.
It's economies of scale, and having the right technicians and the right. It's just like a team, a football team, a basketball team. Mm-hmm. It's who's your players and who's your coach, and does the ownership put the money into the people that they need to? And we do. I mean, like our equipment, we have over $4 million of equipment that we upgraded and bought. Some of it we already owned to do the French Quarter contract. It was only a year contract. And so it's not like we're making any money off of the first year with all the money we spent, but the amount of advertising and great being able to show what we can do on stage in the French Quarter gives us the ability to grow our company just like we did when we did it after Katrina.
All right. Give me top five celebrities you've been hanging out with lately.
Well, I mean, obviously, Lenny and I have been friends since I was 12. So we live next door, and I have a resort in the Bahamas. So his place is right next to my house.
I have a resort in the Bahamas. I've never seen you guys down there.
Well, I usually see him a lot there, so we're still friends. And he actually endorsed Helena. He did a really good video for Helena because he met her, he liked her, and he knew her from before, thought she would be great for the city of New Orleans. So I was able to get him to do that. But he's a good friend, and he does things that are good for the city. He loves the city of New Orleans, and he had a house here. He's actually looking to get another house here. He loves it so much.
That's one. Give me four other celebrities that you've been hobnobbing with.
Bobby's Kid Rock has been a friend of mine for some time, really close to my mother. They have a great relationship. So he's been, over the years, very close with them. But I don't want to sit here and brag about all the people.
No, I don't want you to brag. I asked you a question. I just want to know what kind of circle you hang with. See if maybe you and I might have, you know, like Venn diagrams where we're hanging out with the same people. Who else?
Well, you know, when you meet friends, when you have friends that are in the business, they know other friends and you become friends with them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, my buddy Randy Gerber, who's married to Cindy Crawford, my brother was the godfather of one of his son. And so he's a good friend. I don't consider they're all friends. I don't say celebrities. So
how about Dwayne Boudreaux? You know,
I don't know. Introduce me to Dwayne.
I was hanging out with him over the weekend.
Right. And then, you know, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I
Tim Zimmer in there. I was hanging out with Tim.
Hey, Tim.
Sitting yeah.
But no, it's I got to give it to Lenny over the years, hanging around him and being around people. I learned a lot how to market. How to do advertising and, you know, branding, all that stuff, being around him, but doing it in my own way, you know. And everybody learns from somebody, right? You pick up, I'm sure, Tommy, you got people that learn from you and go off and...
Oh, I don't know about all that. Let's not get crazy. 9:22, we're going to take a break. We come back. I want to talk about you as a kid when you're 6, 7 years old, where, you know, your family's got a history in St. Bernard Parish, but how did you not wind up in a law firm? Because it seems as though a lot of your family is in law, right?
That's right. I deal with enough lawyers, I think.
Is that it? All right. I just want to know how you went when you were 7 years old. Where'd you go to school? I want to find out about how Sidney Torres went from there to here.
Absolutely.
Because you know what? And I make this example seriously, where, you know, when you talk about crime in the city or this or that or the other thing, we're all in our bassinets at Baptist Hospital, wherever, right?
That's right.
So we're all equal, right, point. And at some point, something happens where some of us are blessed, some of us get breaks, some of us go here, some of us take advantage of breaks, some of us don't, some of us don't have the breaks, and then that's how we all wind up where we are as adults. We'll pick it up. We come back. Sidney Torres going up close and personal with him. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. 9:30 going up close in person with Sidney Torres IV, IV, the CEO of IV Waste. We're talking off the air. One thing that we have in common, I lost my brother. My brother was older than I was, and I lost him later in life. And I miss him every day because he was, man, he should have this job, honestly. He was the funnier one. He was the smarter one. And I feel guilty about that sometimes. Tell me about the brother you lost.
Yeah, you makes me choke up a little bit about that, because my brother was the same way. Mm-hmm. He was the outgoing one. When you were down, he was there. Even if he was in California, before you know it, he's back here trying to take you to do something to make you forget about it. He was very smart. He wanted to be a lawyer. He actually was going to law school. And he could argue with anyone. So whenever he get into a debate, you just back down because you know he's going to win.
Going to win anyway.
He's going to win anyway. But we were born on the same day, 1 year apart.
No kidding.
Yeah, his name was Anthony Randazzo Torres. The bakery Randazzo is my great grandfather. That's why they named him that. But Anthony Randazzo Torres. He was a really good brother. And like I said, we
Ark Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARC machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for teen.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Spent a lot of time together. He was with me in the beginning stages of SDT after Katrina. He was helpful with going out marketing the business and going out and getting new contracts and things. And but yeah, I miss him every day, and I think about him every birthday I have. We share the same birthday together. We were 1 year apart.
When's your birthday?
August 27th, 1975.
Okay. August 11th. Do you still talk to him? I talk to mine all the time.
I do. And the hardest times I talk to him because, and you know, a lot of people say they can hear the voice. I don't hear the voice, but I see things that happen that cause me to realize that he's there with me.
I don't talk to mine in the toughest of times. I talk to him in the funniest of times because he was just, man, he could make me laugh like you wouldn't believe. And it just, rather than be maudlin about it, I think I just celebrate his life, and I'm not criticizing what you do. I'm just saying everybody has their own relationship, and with me, it was just comedy. It was just humor. The funniest things that I can remember, the best times I had were with him. It really was. His name was Gerard, by the way, and I miss him.
Gerard. My brother, I got to tell you, if I was going through a breakup, and especially like in a breakup or anything like that, he would be the first one to throw a party and have a bunch of people over. And but it wasn't just that. He was there for me at tough times, and he was always, you know, it was a car accident. He was driving from Slidell. You remember how when you come across it after you pass the Twin Span, the interstate there used to be very bumpy.
Oh, yeah.
And there was two police officers sitting underneath the overpass, and it was raining a little bit, and he was on, I think he was playing, messing with his phone. When he looked up, he saw the two police officers. It was raining. They were undercover under the overpass, and he didn't want to hit them, so he veered off from them and ran into the pole.
I'm so sorry.
But he's with me every day. He's with me right now.
Yeah.
So
as is mine. Gerard, me.
Yeah, Tony.
Tony Gerard. Okay. So you mentioned Randazzo, and I can remember, you know, Choctaw used to be in Algiers, and we'd take the ferry to go get king cakes from Randazzo's. That was before the big king cake explosion. How did you not get in the king cake business? How did you avoid that?
Well, you know, there was the brothers. It was my grandmother who was the clerk of court, Lena Randazzo Torres. She was in there from 1939, and she died at 100 years old. She was my rock, and she, her father started Randazzo's Bakery with his three sons, it was in Lower St. Bernard where they started, and it was called, I think it was Good Friends Bakery, Randazzo's Bakery, and then it became Randazzo's Bakery, and then now the brothers' kids opened up their own, one in St. Tammany, one in Jefferson Parish, and they do very well with it. They mail out the king cakes all over during king cake season, and I think they actually close during the regular time of year because they do so well for king cake season.
Yeah, they get pretty good life going.
Pretty good thing going there. But I never did, you know, they were that family was in that, and I can tell you I ate a lot of donuts and king cakes when I was younger, but never did get into it.
Well, you ever overweight in your life?
Oh, yeah. I had a little chunky,
really?
Chunky stage. Oh, yeah.
Because you don't have an extra pound on you now. Tell me about growing up. What did you want to be when you were growing up? 7, 8 years old? Those kind of things.
You know, my mom told the story, and I hear this all the time, and I've seen pictures too. I'm a clean freak. Like, I'm a neat freak. I don't like clutter. I like everything, you know, clean, simple. My counters, I don't want anything on them. I used to go around the house with a towel and a Windex bottle and cleaning the...
straighten up here while Sydney talks.
Cleaning windows, and I used to love cutting grass and going outside and being...
The instant gratification of it?
I did. Okay. I really did. Like, to see, you know, something overgrown or dirty and having it clean. And I used to love seeing the garbage truck come by in the morning. That's why when we get these parents that call us and say...
Really? How old were you?
I used to run outside and bring those little Miller Lite ponies. I'd be like, the guy name was Garvey. I'd say, Garvey, hold on. And I'd bring out these little Michelob ponies. And my mom would always say, they can't drink while they're... What? No, I said, he's going to drink it when he finishes
it. How old were you when you had this?
Oh, probably 7, 8, no kidding. You know, running outside, bringing him a little Miller Lite pony. And Garvey was his name. But I don't know, for some reason, I love like manual labor and doing things that you see instant gratification where you see it overgrown or dirty and it's clean or the grass is cut. And I just had a liking for that. I love doing mechanic work. I used to, you know, take things apart, put them back together. So, you know, at the end of the day, I never did really want to be a lawyer. My dad was a lawyer. I wasn't big in sitting there studying and reading books. I'm dyslexic, so I struggled in school. And when I was coming up, people didn't realize what dyslexia was. They thought, you know, oh, he needs to be in a smaller class and he can't read. But I learned how to, just like Tom Cruise, and there's a bunch of people that have had dyslexia that learn how to process and deal with it. And so it's, I think I did all right.
Yeah, I think you did too. See, when I was like 5, and this is not about me, it's about you, but I was in a supermarket and they had an attic hatch, and I heard the music in the store, the Muzak being played, and I thought somebody in my 5-year-old mind was up in there playing the music, and I thought, you know what, that'd be a good job to have. So at 5, I kind of figured out that I wanted to be on the radio, and it's interesting to hear you say that at 7, it's not a surprise to see that you are where you are now, right? I mean, because you were running out to the garbage trucks when you were 7 and you were appreciating the work that they did, right?
I agree. And I tell people all the time that I mentor, because I mentor a few people each year, or, you know, and I always tell them, find your passion. If you don't know what you want to do, you might do a few things before you actually find out what you're going to do. But you want to find stuff that you love doing. You don't do it just for the money. I mean, you know, I've been very blessed and I've done very well with my real estate and hotels and the other garbage company that I sold. I do what I do today because I love it. I love this city. I could live anywhere, but I love this city and I love doing what I'm doing. And I think, you know, it's important that we mentor and help get other people like that. Like, for example, Larry Morrow with Morrow's Hospitality. I remember when he came to me, I helped him and mentored him. And now he's one of the largest restaurant owners here in the city as far as what he's doing in his hospitality business. And I'm so proud of him. I think it's important that you try different things when you're growing up and figure out what you love to do and do it. I had a little stint in radio too. When I went to, after I graduated high school, I went to Baton Rouge at the Tiger.
Did you?
107, okay. The Tiger.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing? I was jocking music?
Yeah, DJing the graveyard shift.
Really?
Yeah.
Give me a little bit of Sidney Torres. What was your name? Did you use Sidney Torres?
I did, yes. I used Sidney Torres.
Give me a little bit of it right here. Tim, find me some classic rock, can you? Find me some Stairway to Heaven here. Yes, let Sidney talk it up and see how he does. Let's see how we do. This is the we're going to call it the Tiger WWL 870. Let me know when we're ready, Tim. Got it. Here we go. Roll it. Hit it.
1007 the Tiger. Good evening. You put me on the spot. As you can hear the instruments in this song, I can't do it. Thanks for joining us tonight, and please come back tomorrow.
Yeah, this will get your night going here. Do some snuggling Led Zeppelin here on WWL 870.
Look at you. You do it. See,
you never lose it.
Give me a garbage truck and
exactly
I can jump on
right,
the back.
But I couldn't do the garbage thing. All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. You are you're a man of faith, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So do you think this is what the good Lord intended you to do?
I do. I think that the good Lord has a plan for all of us, and sometimes it's sooner than later. I think we go through, you know, trials and tribulations, and we have to learn how to, as I saw De Niro say one time, when things are good, be cool. When things are bad, be cool. Just be cool. And I know that sounds so easy, or I'm saying it so easy, but it's not easy to do. But I do believe if you have faith, you can have a stairway to heaven.
Did you? Yeah, there you go. He saved it at the end. Sidney Torres will be back, WWL. 9:46, 14 till 10, going up close and personal with Sidney Torres. I'm trying to combine the big picture, the little picture here. So you went to high school where?
I went to high school in Connecticut, Marblewood.
And before that?
Before that, De La Salle.
All right, so you go to high school in Connecticut, then you go to college where?
I went to college at LSU for a minute, not long, and that's when I started working at 107 The Tiger.
Do you have a college degree or not?
I don't.
Really?
No.
No kidding. There you go.
I have a degree of hard knocks.
You got a degree in the school of life. I quit 10 years, college 10 years. I went to the school of life, and I think it did me as much good as it did, actually, the degree did.
Amen.
Tell me about your faith and how important that is to you, if you don't mind.
It's very important. You know, I've gone through, you know, periods where I go really hard into it and reading the Bible and doing, you know, going, because I don't know how to do things halfway. I always like to go all the way. And mm-hmm. and there's a balance, you know, in faith where you can live life and enjoy life, but also practice the what's your faith is and live by it. And so, you know, as I get older, I just turned 50. I'm learning how to
get the hell out. Yeah, really?
Yeah.
I'm
learning how to wake up in the morning and take a minute to thank God for everything and throughout the day, and when I go to bed at night, and just be blessed for all the things I have. And you know, people think, oh, well, you got all this stuff. It's you know, when you have as many people and things that I'm dealing with on a daily basis, you want to treat everyone in a way that is, to me, that's through faith and how you treat people. You treat people like you want to be treated. That's why I always say, you know, when I watch people attack people, I always say, you can attack the idea, you can debate on the issue, but don't start attacking the person personally, because that's when you lose all credibility and nothing gets done.
You know, I'm not trying to proselytize here, but it's like this little light of mine, I got to let it shine. That goes to your mentoring people as well, right? Because you know that, going to what I said before about we're all in our bassinet at Baptist Hospital, and some of us go one way, some of us go the other. I know that I would not be here were I not exposed to the different things where I had a break here, I had a break there, I had a break somewhere else. I'm not foolish enough to think that I'm a self-made man, because I know I'm not. I know I had a lot of benefits a lot of other people didn't have, and maybe to my credit, I did take advantage of them, but maybe I was in a position because of something else I was exposed to take advantage of them. Give me your thoughts on all of that.
I mean, look, I have a close friend that's in faith too, and he always says, you know, things that you've done in the past that you don't feel good about, do something good for somebody else to make up for that as you go through life. And, you know, a lot of people don't know, but, and I've talked about this before, I had a heroin problem when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And really being on the road and being in that rock and roll lifestyle, you know, I was exposed to a lot of things and you know, got involved in with the wrong people. And it's only because of the grace of God I was able to get sober and get off, and because it's one of the hardest things to get off of. And, you know, for me, it's taught me a lot. And one of the biggest things it's taught me is my management always says, why are you giving him a fifth chance, a sixth chance? Why are you doing this? Why? And I'll give somebody more chances than anybody else, because I can relate to the struggle, whether it's the guy in the back of the truck, the guy in the truck, you know, the manager, whoever it is. I always believe people should have chances, and I believe in giving more than just a second and a third. And it's hard sometimes because people take advantage of that, but I believe that if you do it through the faith and you do it because you believe it's the right thing to do, you can save someone.
What kind of chance do you think the city has with the new mayor and, well, we don't know what the council is going to look like yet, but some of the people that are on the council now?
I'm super excited. I think it's going to be great. I think the city has a lot ahead of it in a positive way. I think Helena is going to be a great leader. She cares about the city. Her heart's in it. She's a great communicator. She's surrounding herself with really good people. I think as long as she continues to do that, I think she's going to have a very good success rate with everything she tries to tackle. She's going to have some ups and downs. I mean, just like anybody does in business. I think JP Morrell is a great council member. I think he calls it like it is. Whether you like it or not, sometimes mm-hmm. he tells you what he thinks.
And as Joe Geruso said, bombastic.
Oh, yeah. JP, I can tell you, man. He's going to tell you what he's thinking. Right. He's not going to sugarcoat it. I think the other council, Eugene Green, Leslie Harris, Freddie King. Those guys are going to be great. And you got Matthew Willard, who's going to be, he's taking Helena's spot. I think he's going to be great. If they all work together, Helena's a good.
You got one seat left.
Yeah, they got the one in the east. That, yeah. And also Uptown. Holly and Amy are running. Mm-hmm. But
those
yeah.
are Joe DiRusso's people.
Well,
he said phrase.
They both
work for him.
They both work. They all work together. So okay. I think Joe's staying out of it. Right. But I mean, we'll see what happens in that. I think it's going to be interesting.
I guess I'm talking about the coaching tree, if you want to look at it that way, coming
correct.
From Joe DiRusso.
Correct. And anybody that comes under Joe is going to be great, because Joe's an amazing guy. And you know, sad to see him go. But, you know, who knows? He might pop up somewhere else, because he's very talented and he's honest. And he's another one that's going to call it like it is. I can call Joe, and if Joe's busy, he will always text me back and say, hey, I'll get to you in an hour or 2 hours. And sure enough, he calls right when he says he's going to call. To me, that's really important.
What impresses me so much about him is nothing just happens. I don't have to tell you this, whether it's chairs at a PTA meeting or whatever it is, nothing just happens. And you got to be a policy wonk at times. You got to understand the mechanism, right? You talk about taking things apart and putting them together. It's no different in government, is it?
That's right. That's right. You got to know exactly what you're doing before you take it apart.
And know
how to put it back together. And if you don't, you need to have the right people around you that can help you when you do take it apart to put it back together.
Along those lines, you know, we talked about immediate gratification. I don't think it's realistic for people to look to Helena Moreno and the council and expect immediate gratification. This is not as easy as, and I'm not trying to say what you do is easy, but it's not the same as picking up a garbage can or that kind of thing, or cutting the grass or anything like that.
I agree with you 100%. But the biggest thing that we have going for us with this new group is that they all are going to communicate, be on the same page, work together to get things done. And I think that's very important. You have to work together, the mayor's office and the council, to get things done. And as long as they can work together and communicate behind the curtain and in front of the curtain and not, you know, make it personal, I think we have a lot ahead of us.
Man, you took the words right out of my mouth, because you talked about you can criticize the idea but not the people. And the idea I get with the mayor and the council is that that's exactly what you're going to get. You're going to get, hopefully, articulate, informed discussion about policy and not personal attacks.
Amen to that.
Any
Amen
final
to that.
Thoughts, Sydney?
No, I just think we all need to, like you said, it's going to take time. There's a lot to do. This is an old city, old infrastructure. And I think, like I said, we're all going to have patience. But I think that Helena's going to get some wins out the gate. And I think we're going to be very surprised when she steps up to the plate.
All right, before you go, drop that name that we talked about off the air that you hang out with sometimes.
Denzel Washington.
Yeah, there you go. All right, we'll take a break and come back. Thank you, Sydney. A pleasure. Come back sometime, all right?
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Sydney Torres, we'll take a break, come back, find out what Newell's got planned today on WWL.
ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.